Hello, my name is Father Gillick, and I'm joined with Father Carlson, both of us from Creighton University. And we have been offering reflections on the relationship between some of the parables of Jesus and some of the fables of Aesop, and we have been talking about both forms of literature. Last time, we gave the first part of the parable of the prodigal son. And we spoke in terms of the son going off by himself. And this will be, by the way, the gospel for this year's fourth Sunday of Lent. So we know that the prodigal son has come home and the father has welcomed him back. But in verse 25, that's where we're starting today. In verse 25, we have the problem of the elder son. The elder son was out in the field, and he hears this great celebration, and he comes home, and he finds that the father has welcomed his son. The father has welcomed his son back. And the father says, "Your brother has come." And your father, the people tell him, "Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf, and he's having a big party." And what we're going to talk about today is the problem of jealousy, comparing, anger, what's just.
Larry, it's good to be with you again. It's a delight to tell and listen to these stories again, the good, probing stories of the gospel and the sometimes challenging fables of Aesop. I'm going to start with a story that helps us get into that world of comparing and estimating and sometimes judging, sometimes angrily. This is a great story that comes from Aesop, and it's about the god Hermes, who was the messenger god, also the god of commerce. So a very important god amongst the Greeks and the Romans. Hermes wanted to know how he stood in the eyes of people, whether he was admired and respected as highly as he thought he was. So, as gods often did, he put himself in human disguise and came down to earth and went to a sculptor, a statue maker. And there he was wandering around the sculptor's workshop where many statues of the gods were on display. He came to a statue of the chief god Zeus, and the sculptor came over and said, "Can I help you?" And Hermes in disguise said, "Yes, how much would you charge for this statue of Zeus?" $100, the sculptor said. Ah, Hermes was interested, because what he was going to get at was, where did he stand with the other gods? So he went next to the statue of the wife of Zeus, Hera. "How much would that cost?" he asked the sculptor. "That would be $90. At this point, Hermes said, "And here is a nice statue of Hermes. How much will you charge for that?" And he was fully expecting that because he was so important to people, maybe his would be $150 or $200. "How much?" he had said to the sculptor, and the sculptor said, "If you take the statues of Zeus and Hera, I'll throw in that statue of Hermes for free." There's the problem, Larry. If we're out there to find out what our comparative opinion is amongst people, how we stand, how much people admire and respect us, we could be in for a big fall, where Hermes expected that he might command 150 or 200 bucks. He was just a throw-in on a deal for others.
It's the old saying, you should never take your temperature in other people's mouths. It's something about accepting the truth of who you are, which is the great praise of God. The parable, that's a great one. The parable, these parables in Luke 15 are directed to the scribes and Pharisees. At the beginning it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' So he told them this parable." So the parable is directed to the Pharisees and the scribes, the righteous ones, the ones who have, in a sense, been the elder brothers, you know. They have been religious in their way all these years, just like the elder brother says, and they seem to be left out. He doesn't eat with the sinners and tax collectors, of course, because the tax collectors and sinners are unclean, and the Pharisees don't want to have them contaminate them. And when Jesus does eat with the Pharisees, say in Luke 7:36, they're there to put him to the test or to prove him wrong. They're really not dining. And Jesus says, "Let me tell you a parable reflective of who you are. You are the elder brother who is judging himself in comparison with his brother." What we call, it's another word, it's called compare-sinning.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you define yourself in terms of how worse or better you are than anybody else.
And Larry, I enjoyed our conversation last time, that the first part of this parable is full of so many good things. As we were saying then, this is one best representation of who Jesus thought God was. God is the Father waiting for his mm-hmm. Son to come back.
But not forcing his son to come.
Not forcing his son to come, and hoping that his son would come back, and in a sense almost giving his heart to his son, hoping the son would realize that he belongs in this family and mm-hmm. somehow would return home. We tend to miss sometimes, talking about the prodigal son, what's going on with this elder son.
Yeah.
And that's where you're saying that there's a lot of the message of this parable in this last second phase of it, where the party's going on and the elder son is out there outside the celebration.
Right, because the sinners, the tax collectors and the sinners, they seemed to be welcomed, just like the prodigal son who had gone off and wasted everything. They're having a party, and the elder one can see it and hear it. And it really is neat. He doesn't want to go in.
Yes.
You know, he wants to stay outside, and and his father has to come to him and tell him something about who he has been. You know, you're not as bad as you think. You're still my son. But if you are defining yourself by what you do or in comparison with your brother, that's not who you are. You aren't what you do, and you aren't in what other people do and you do or don't do. You are my son. That's what he's saying. And he's saying to the Pharisees and the scribes, you're not letting me dine with you, that is, tell you who you are.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you have another fable for us?
First, I want to talk some more about the parable, if we can.
Okay, good.
We saw last time in the first half of this parable that the prodigal son who went off really missed the relationship with his father.
That's right.
He thought of it in terms of his life
right.
and his portion of the family's resources or right. money.
It was almost a business transaction.
Give me that and let me go make
right.
my life.
Yeah.
And that we saw how painful that must be for the father, that the son, in a sense, wants him dead. Doesn't care whether he's living or dead.
That's right.
The younger son has to go off and make his life. I think the same thing is true of this second half of the parable. The elder son, too, misses the relationship with the father.
That's right.
He's thinking, when he comes in, he says,
he's owed something.
Right. You never gave me a goat.
Right.
I've slaved for you out in the field right. and worked for you, and you haven't rewarded me. One of the things that's striking for me, Larry, just as I found it striking that the father in the first half of the parable is watching out for that long-lost
son right.
and runs out to him and puts the robe on him and puts a ring on his finger
right.
and embraces him and protects him against the townspeople. Here, the father comes out from the party to that elder son and seeks him out, wants him to be a part of the fun, is aware that he's missing the fun, and comes to him, and my hat's off to Jesus or to Luke. You and I are not parents, but whoever composed this text most has a great sense, I think, of the pain of that parent to hear his son talking of the relationship in terms of what have you given me? What do I have from you? And so I can feel the pain of that father as he comes outside, talks with his son, and says, look, everything I have is yours. The pain that this son has been with him so long and still hasn't understood that it's about the relationship. It's about giving each other all that they are. So just as with the younger son, this father is still working with that older brother, still trying to help him see what it's about, that it's about the relationship. For me, signs that this older son hasn't gotten it, and that's why I find it's a good reference when you say it belongs to the Pharisees. That's who Jesus is talking about here. The scribes and the Pharisees are that older brother. As so often with these stories, that's a great reference, but it spreads out. The story spreads out to us, and we find ourselves maybe in that older brother.
Sure. You know, that's true. I think we're both the younger and the older.
Right.
And in some ways, they're the same. The younger son is getting his identity from taking what's his. He says it's what's owed to me, and saying, this is my identity. And listen to what the elder son says. And you got to have sympathy for the elder son, I think. He says, lo, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. That's
yes.
You know, that he's got a good complaint, and that is just what you said. This a plea of his saying, I have been good and I have kept the commandments. I have done all the righteous things. I have been in relationship with you by what I do. But what I do has given my identity. And just what you're saying, the father wants to give the son, both sons, their true identity, not by what they have or what they have done, but by the relationship. And that's why the Father is both the Godfather, but he's also God the Son. He is Jesus. The Father is Jesus.
Yes.
And he's saying, there's a whole new way of getting your identity. It's not by what you possessions you have, nor is it what you do by keeping all the commandments. That I have a relationship with you that you can't walk away from, like the elders, the younger son, and you can't achieve it like the elder son.
Good. When I struggle with this in my own life, with the elder son in me, if you want. And I'm glad for the kind of sympathy that you have with this elder son, because he's in a tough spot. He's learned this way of dealing. He's worked hard. He's given it all of his energy. And the payoff for him, I guess he sees in terms of kind of earning something from the father, earning maybe his portion of the father's resources, earning the father's approval. He's worked very hard at that.
Right. Excuse me. But he also says, just what you're saying, I have done, but you never gave me anything. You didn't give me a kid that I might have my own party with my friends. But when this no good son of yours, he says, who's devoured your living with all this stuff, look what you do. It seems the worse you are, the more you're going to get. And the better I am, the less I get.
The less I get. The signs for me, Larry, when I'm praying, maybe making a retreat, or trying to hear the scriptures like this great story, two signs for me that I'm missing it with God are when I find myself comparing myself with others.
That's right.
And when I find myself judging either myself or others.
That's right.
Just as this older brother stands in ugly judgment on his younger brother, this guy who wasted your substance with loose women off in foreign countries.
Right.
This older brother can't open his arms to his own brother, because he's caught in his kind of judgmental world, and because his way of being someone is by comparison.
That's right.
I think I'm better than this Right. No good younger brother, why don't you reward me?
Well, he's also saying that he never expressed to the Father until now. You know, it's how we save things up for the crescendo. You know, and furthermore, by the way, you never gave me, and look at what he got. So there is some poor me, but he's got a just cause, what Jesus, this whole new way. I mean, Jesus, this is really revolutionary stuff for the Pharisees and scribes, because they have been getting their identity, as we do, from our religious righteousness and all this. And Jesus says, "No, son, you are always with me," he says at the end, "and all that is mine is yours. You just didn't know it."
Yes. Right. So I don't have to count up the number of kid goat parties you throw for me as a sort of sign of whether I've made it as your son.
Right.
My sense, Larry, as I read this story, is that the listeners that Jesus and Luke have in mind should go away from this parable saying, like both sons, I need to grow in understanding the kind of surprising love this father has.
Yeah.
Neither son really gets it yet.
That's right.
But what's happening is that the father is trying to give them a heart like his own. He's kind of loving them into mature sonship.
Right.
And as I say, that would involve a certain amount of pain for this father to see how they don't get it. Even the young son coming back is thinking mostly in terms of apologizing and getting better food and regaining his standard of living. This father is never going to be done working with these sons.
That's right on, because this is a little past middle of Luke's gospel, and Jesus saying, okay, I'm going to give these three stories about the shepherd that went after the one sheep and the woman that found the one coin and the prodigal son. I am aware that this is so new, you're not going to get it right away. One story, one fable, one parable, one good teaching, one miracle doesn't do it for you, because you are so entrenched in what you think God is and what you think you are by your actions or your inactions. So you're right. Not only do the two sons not get it, but definitely the Pharisees don't get it. You know who gets it? The tax collectors.
They understand.
They're sitting at table saying, you tell them, boss.
Yeah, we're on the good side.
We're on the good side. And these guys that were always on the good side, you're telling them they're on the bad side.
Yeah, and it's time for us to win one. This is, you know, our basketball team is going 0-15 in the eyes of all the important people for a long time.
Right.
All the Jews hate us. Now somebody's telling us something
that
on our side.
Yeah.
I wanted to say one more thing, Larry, about the parable, and that is, I've said before in this series, my sense of parables is that they're very good at questioning our values.
Absolutely.
At kind of digging into what are the sort of beliefs or myths or images out of which we operate in our lives. And that's why somebody like you and me can come along and read this parable when we're 20 years old and find something in there, and when we're 30 years old, a little bit more, a little bit different, and when we're 40 years old and maybe we've been parents and maybe we've understood what it is to try to love kids into maturity. The parables keep on reaching in and asking us about our values, and we're always going to be finding more. Yeah. If we can put our hearts into these stories and let ourselves be the characters that are in
them. That's right. And maybe as we get older, we do find it easier to identify with what could be considered the bad guys or the ungrateful. It's like the fables. There's always something new in there, because we're always new. That's why when you go to Scripture, you say, well, it's the same old story. No, it's a new story because you've changed since yesterday. You can read a parable or a fable yesterday, and because of life's experiences maturing you or opening you up to a new truth about yourself or about life, it's brand new. Oh, I didn't see that yesterday. That's right. Because the parables and grace, the work of God, is always, you might say, opening your eyes to something new.
And so conversion's an ongoing thing, and we can never say, oh, I converted 10 years ago or last week or... And there's always something new to beckon to us, because we're new.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right. What do you got for us? Another fable that'll help us.
This is another one about that sort of comparative, angry, and judgmental sort of thinking. Each of the gods used to be paired up in the ancient world with a particular bird. This is a story about the peacock who came to the peacock's god, and that's Hera, the same goddess I mentioned as the wife of the main god Zeus.
What other birds in the were earlier associated with
God? Athena was associated with the owl a lot, and the eagle was associated with Zeus. So the peacock came to Hera one day, complaining with injured pride that she, the goddess Hera, had not given him, the peacock, the tuneful voice of a nightingale, whose song was admired by everyone who heard it, while the poor peacock was laughed to scorn as soon as he ever opened his mouth. The goddess Hera, to try to console him, said, "But in beauty you surpass the nightingale, and in size you surpass the nightingale. The brilliance of the emerald glitters on your neck. You spread a tail bedecked with jewels and painted feathers." "But," the peacock answered, "what's the use of giving me a silent beauty if I am humiliated by my voice?" Hera's answer was, "We all have different gifts. You have beauty, the eagle has strength, the nightingale has music. We need to live contented with our own particular gifts. Do not strive for that which has not been given to you, lest your hope be deluded and you fall into self-pity."
I don't like that one. Because I always want what I don't have, because it's better than what I do have.
Yes. Yes. That fable for me brings together those things of judgment. You know, I feel terrible. I'm laughed at. Of comparison, other people have gifts I don't have, and that makes me feel humiliated or terrible. There's some anger in there and harshness. And there's something there that the goddess, in answering her, gets back at. When she says, "Watch out that you don't get caught in a kind of self-pity here, that you really get wrapped up in yourself when you're doing this kind of thinking." It's the same sort of thing we saw in the elder brother when he can't enjoy the party and go out and embrace his younger brother. There's a kind of self-centeredness here that shows us, I think, that we're not at our best.
Yes, but it's precisely, we're not at our best, and if I had what seems to me to make you better, if I had that, then I'd be better than you and feel better about me than I do right now. I compare myself because I'm not happy. The elder son says he's angry.
Yes.
And he's counting everything that he did is not much. He hasn't done much to gain all that the younger brother did. So everything he looks at is not as good as what the younger brother did because of the reward he gets.
Yes.
I mean, and Athena says, "Well, you have the comfort of being so beautiful and everything." That's nothing compared to that jewel, a beautiful voice that I'd really like.
Yes. I was not a great baseball player as a kid, Larry, but I was on a good team. I was not a good hitter, not bad as a fielder. Well, I can still remember the day when I got two hits and one of them was a triple. But I cried that evening because I was slow on the base paths. I wanted to have it all.
You wanted to have a home run?
I wanted to have a home run. I wanted to have all the gifts, hitting and fielding and running. And because I was comparing myself with other people, I felt down because I didn't have some of the gifts that they had. And so there I was in my kind of self-pity, a little angry and hurt, trying to make myself better than I was. And we all had some gifts on that team.
Which is to say, God gives everybody different gifts, and the acceptance of those gifts is what's going to make us happy.
Yes.
I mean, if the elder son could have accepted the gift of the father's relationship, I've always been with you, and that the gift that his son, that his brother, has come home, he'd be happy. But it sounds like and maybe Jesus is saying this. This is where you interpret parables and fables. Maybe the Pharisees, after all, are not real happy living with the burdens they impose on themselves.
Yes.
You know, that they have to do this and they have to do that. And for doing all that, there doesn't seem to be any reward or any consolation or any sense of value. They just keep making sure that they do all the things. And, of course, they're very unhappy because they also have to make other people bear the burdens of the law, the yoke. And they're saying, you got to do this. And they're very skeptic, you know, watching everybody's actions and are they doing it right? They don't seem to be happy. And maybe that's part of the parable, too, that the elder son is not happy because, as the Pharisees, he's always looking. And maybe long before the son left,
yes,
he was making the son feel bad. Maybe he was part of why the son had to take off, because he was always under the burden of the elder son's judgment. You didn't do this, you didn't do that.
Yeah, you're not as good as me. You haven't worked as hard as I have. I think when Jesus proclaims at Nazareth that he has come to liberate those who are in captivity, mm-hmm. the Pharisees would have been one of the first groups he's thinking of.
Yeah.
They're caught, and Larry, the way I try to picture it to myself is they're caught missing the heart of it all, which is relationship with God.
That's it.
Once you let that be what gives you your identity in life, then the other gifts are all just that, gifts, and you can be grateful for them. You're not going to try to make those gifts create your identity.
That's right.
You can receive who you are, enjoying being loved by God, and then take whatever you've got, whether it's a good hand or a bad one, whether it's a lot of talents or less talents. You don't have to create yourself in comparison with other people with this kind of endless
yeah.
round of hard activity to try to arrive,
that's
to
right.
be admired,
right.
to be better than other people, sort of to have a leg to stand on.
Right.
I think what the father in that parable is saying to both sons is, your leg to stand on is that we're family, that
yeah.
I love you.
That's right.
You have everything that is mine. But yeah. but it's not about having things. It's about being someone in my eyes, and then everything else is yours as gift, whatever you've mm-hmm. got. Enjoy it. Use it.
That's right. It's as we say, it's about identity. It's better to receive it than achieve it.
You bet.
But both in the parable and in the fable, the truth remains that the peacock can't sing.
That's true.
And Athena doesn't say, I'm gonna help you. No, you can't sing very well. And the father never says, no, the son didn't go away. No, he said, yeah, you're right. The son, he was dead and he was lost. He messed up big time. What I'm getting at is that part of the relationship with Jesus is that we have to admit the truth, but the truth of our past, of our failings, of our comparing, of our sin. We are the tax collectors. Jesus doesn't say, no, these are really good guys. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, Zacchaeus was a tax collector, and because of the meeting with Jesus, he changed.
Yes.
You know, he admits what it is. So there is, both for the tax collectors and the Pharisees, the call, as you were saying before, to keep growing, to keep developing.
Yes.
You know?
For me, Larry, it's a matter of living face-to-face with God. If for both of those sons, the call in the prodigal son story, the call is to live face-to-face, with their father. Not to be working for the father or to be right. taking from the father.
To be in relationship with the father.
It's to be in relationship with the father. And my sense of what Jesus is saying to a sinner is, to tax collectors if you want, is, first of all, I love you. Look me in the eyes and know that I care for you, whatever you have done, whatever you are doing. In fact, whatever you will do, mm-hmm. I care for you. But that look you see in my eye also calls you to be more the person you can be, to accept your limitations, to admit your truth, mm-hmm. the things that you don't do so well, the things that you have not done well at all.
Yeah.
Those aren't taken away by the fact that I love you, and right. my loving you will always be an invitation to do what you can.
To be who you are.
To be who you are.
That's right. So that it would be wrong for us to try to be somebody we're not.
That's the truth. So I've got one more fable for you, and that's the story about the ass and the dog. Mm. Both of them lived on a farm with a good farmer. The ass went out. He got harnessed each morning to go out and work hard in the field with the farmer. And as it came towards end of day, towards sundown, the farmer would bring him back, take him out of his harness, put him in the barn, give him some hay. And then the ass would notice as he stood there in his stall that the farmer, as he went home, met the dog. And the dog would leap up into his arms yeah. and lick his face, and the farmer was happy to see him and would take him inside. And the dog would be there while the farmer was eating, and the farmer would throw the dog scraps, yeah. and the dog would bark, and the farmer laughed at it and enjoyed the dog. The ass had seen this so many times and felt so envious of the dog. That finally one evening, after the farmer brought him into the stall, the ass broke out of his stall in the barn and broke through the door of the barn and broke into the house and thought, I can do what that dog did. I can win the love of that farmer. And so he came over and jumped into the farmer's lap and tried to lick his face and was hee-hawing all he could because he thought that's what the dog did when it barked and that farmer loved it. Well, the farmer was amazed. He was surprised. He was practically knocked over in his chair when this ass leapt upon him wanting to play.
Yeah.
He called to his farmhands and to the people who were there with him at dinner to get their clubs and get this ass off of him and take the ass back to the barn and beat him back into his stall. Like so many fables, it's a sad fable.
Mm-hmm.
It grows again out of comparison. The ass wanted to be the dog, wanted to have the gifts of the dog, couldn't be content just being who he was, the ass,
mm-hmm.
but seeing himself in comparison with the dog, felt second best and judged, and ended up getting just a good clubbing for his efforts to be somebody else. We can't. We've got to be ourselves. And the good news is, for those of us who believe, you look in the eyes of a God or of a Jesus who loves you, and that's where we find that it's great to be who we are.
Yeah.
That's the gift.
Sure. So the question for the two of us here, and maybe people who are listening to us, judging which one of us is better. And I wish I could speak like you. And I'm sure you wish like you could look like me.
If parables and fables get us to laugh, they're doing a good thing, too.
Or to pray and still be friends.
Yes.
Well, thank you for tuning in. We'll be online probably halfway during Lent this year. We'll come up with something to help your Lenten prayer again. God bless you.
Thanks for being with us.